Greetings, lovely listeners. You are listening to Saga, a podcast where a dude and a chick discuss art and animation.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Saga Podcast. This is your host, Sarah, with Garrison. We are returning this week with a movie called Yamasung March of the Hollows. And this week we're doing a format called What Happens Next, where we kind of look at the movie and we're like, okay, so what happens next?
Spoiler alert, this audio may contain spoilers, so please proceed with caution or an open mind. I don't care.
Right. We basically come up with our own sequel, basically. But before that, let's briefly go over the plot of this movie. So this is a sort of a continuation slash sequel to a short from 7 years earlier, like about a 10-minute short from 7 years earlier. And this story picks up right after it, and we're placed in this fantasy world called Yamasung, and there's this old guy who like left his world, and he like wanted to like build his own life. Like he wanted to create robots that were basically his children, but some like stuff went bad and they turned on him. And they tried to take over this planet, Yamasung. But the main hollow, right? So they're called hollows. And so the main hollow, she created her own child, hollow. And the kid hollow, I guess because she was created by another hollow, she wasn't burdened by the others, so she kind of had free will or something like that.
She was the only one that was like given a heart.
I think that comes that kind of comes later when she meets the Terrapin guy.
Okay.
Because in the first like 3 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes, it recaps the short. And so basically what I gathered from what happened in that short was Nani is the name of the child hollow, and then Shojin is the name of the turtle Terrapin guy. So they meet and they go through some journey, and then somehow they're linked because it's mentioned in the movie that like the Terrapin has the eyes of a hollow, so his people don't trust him. But now she has a patchwork kind of heart, so they like did something to where they're like linked now. But the hollows, after like some battle or skirmish or something, were imprisoned on this moon prison. The moon prison. But because of the girl's patchwork heart, it like messed with the delicate mechanisms on the moon planet, and it malfunctioned, and then the moon planet crashed down, causing the second rising of the hollows, thus the name of the movie March of the Hollows. I guess that's basically the general premise. The hollows are attacking again and they have to stop them.
Okay, so we haven't really discussed, you know, maybe what happens at the end, but I think from Garrison's amazing description, we can kind of confer that it's probably going to be a happy ending. This is one of those movies that does have a happy ending. This is not one of those movies that is gruesome or like superly morbid, you know, for the most part, I would say. So, you know, if you have not seen this movie yet, I would see it or read about it if you don't want to watch the entire movie. So that you can kind of get an understanding about maybe where our views are at about the end of this. I don't know, Garrison, what do you think?
About the ending?
Yes. Or, you know, like about like our listeners, how they should go about like understanding our views when it comes to what happens next.
That's a good point. Like, should they watch it so they know?
Or we can, yeah, I mean, we can spoil it for him. I mean, it is really a happy ending. Like, I don't think anything really terrible happens besides, somebody dies, but.
Well, you go first. Give me your thoughts.
Okay. So it's really complicated because I feel like for those of you that probably haven't seen this film, like, it would be like, oh, okay, so what does this mean? But okay, so I'm just going to say it, I guess. Nani, you know, one of the main characters, she has to raise her mother to be good after all the chaos that's happened. She was never really good to begin with, I guess, and since the beginning of the film. So towards the end, she like has this like Russian doll effect where she loses all of her masks that she's been like collecting over the years and like, I guess, changing faces, which is kind of schemey, you know, like in kind of a weird way. Like, I didn't think that there'd be like more faces underneath that, but apparently she needed all of those faces. So in the end, she turns out to be just like the raw self of who she was before, like when she was first made. And she's like a child, basically. But Nani then has to raise her. And it's kind of this weird moment because the mother is like, Mom? And Nani's like, no, you can call me sister. So I, you know, she's got to raise her to be good. So she's got to reteach her. It's like that moment in Adventure Time. If any of you guys have seen Adventure Time, you know about the Lich King and how Finn defeats the Lich King and returns him to his like very pure self. And he turns into a baby and has to like raise him to be good. And he's like this beautiful, cute little baby Lich King. So cute. Now, the mother's not that cute, but you get the idea. Okay, so there's that. And then, you know, Nani, of course, then becomes the new leader of all the Hollows. But she also learns to... and. Remember, this is just my idea, my perspective about where this movie is headed. This is not real yet. She learns to create new Hollows and creatures of her own and makes a world that she believes is good and virtuous and, you know, blah, blah, good, beautiful stuff. And then Shoji, the other main, Shojin, the other main character... in this, whose father was the previous leader of his village where he came from, but was exiled from. Unfortunately, his father died in this film. Spoilers alert. Okay. So Shojin becomes the new leader of his village without, you know, maybe there's like some grumblings in the village and maybe he's got to like fight for his position because there's like some, you know, some higher ups that were really close to his dad that were like, well, I should have been a leader. And then there's like maybe some conflict there. And I feel like that would be like a really good new conflict for like a new film. If he was the one that was really like battling his demons versus like Nani, who was fighting her mom, which was essentially her demon.
Yeah, like hearing you talk about yours, it got me to like thinking about like different possibilities. Are you done?
No, that's it. That's it. If you want to go on.
So for me, we've done what happens next a few times, and usually it's like not a big problem. You know, it's like scheme up of like what would happen next. But like for this one, for me, it was kind of in my notes for the plot, I wrote boring cliche nonsense. And it was kind of the characters were kind of just there, and there wasn't really much characterization to them. They just got sort of talked in these in like metaphors sometimes, and
like idiot.
Right. And they were, and it was really it took itself like too seriously, and like there weren't any jokes in it. And you know, the story was pretty basic, so it really didn't give me much to work with. But you talking about Nani's mom and the masks made me think of, like, what if this was actually deeper than I gave it credit for? Like, what if the masks represent like Jungian psychology, in that the masks that we wear are personas that we show to the world, but we actually like hide our real selves. And like she was hidden under like six or seven masks, right? So like, what happened to her? Because like, she was the leader, right? So like, were the masks placed by her, or were they placed by their creator? And and like something interesting, like an interesting thing that they could do for a sequel would be, but maybe their creator wasn't that great. Like, what if like he had a past, like a dark past, and like he, like maybe the hollows weren't even created by him, but like he like builds more masks to like create his own version of what he saw them to be. But something else you said was about Shojin sort of ruling his own village, and I thought, okay, so maybe we established that Shojin and Nani have like some sort of link, right? So what if all of the hollows and the terrapins sort of linked, like they had like this psychic link, and they all, so that would sort of make the hollows like more human, and the other creatures, they would have, I would imagine, some sort of like strength to it. Like the bond would like give the terrapins something too, and which could lead into the threat that I thought of for this film, the tricksters, who are briefly mentioned, who are like these tree-headed people that like set down these flaming soot balls or something. So I imagine they would come back for a second time, but now with like the terrapins and the hollows working as one, something like that. Maybe a time skip where Shojin is like older, like he has a kid or something. Yeah, like his kid and Nani's mom sister, they would like become friends.
Aww. Yeah. Mom sister.
That's it. It's not really.
Yeah, there wasn't much of a cliffhanger for this. It was very like full circle. It kind of came full circle in this whole film. It didn't really allude to any like second film or anything. And I think that's kind of the way the creator established it to be. Because this, I think the film was released in 2015. And
17.
Okay, so it's not that long ago. So 2017, and you know, his name is Sam,
Koji Hale, I think.
Yeah, Koji Hale, who's a puppeteer, and I like you said, he created this originally as a short film, and he may not have originally seen this to be a full feature, but here we are, with a full feature.
Right. Well, like, it's not, this movie isn't a longer version of the short. It's like a continuation, right? So I think, okay, so first off, I gotta say, even though I was kind of frustrated with this movie, which I imagine we'll talk about soon, but Sam, right? His name is Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Sam, I respect that he was able to see through to his vision, and that he was able to make a film, actually several films I saw on his IMDb page, but That I respect about him, and that's cool. But this just
was not for your taste.
Yeah, you.
So I feel like there's like a community out there that just absolutely adores this, which is 100% valid. You know, cult films arise because of that. You know, those small communities that are like, oh my god, like, let me share this with my friends and see what they think, and then everybody, you know, kind of catches on. And I have no doubt that at some point this movie could catch on and catch a really big break. However, this film had a lot of things that, like you said, were like, well, you know, I kind of wish it, for me it was like, I kind of wish it wasn't as long as it was. It could have probably cut down like a half hour or so of some of the action that really, like, there's a lot of action and like kicking and, you know, like sword play or martial arts or something, which was kind of cool. It was very cinematic, but I think for puppets, it's just kind of, it's different. Like, I don't know if I'm explaining this well enough, but it's just not as good for this platform and this is my personal opinion. Like, I think that kind of like martial arts just doesn't work for claymation, for puppetry, and honestly it doesn't really work for animation in a lot of times. I don't think I've ever seen a martial arts animated film that wasn't about hamsters or turtles, you know?
Anime, like a martial arts.
I mean, like, that's Cowboy Bebop, and usually it has a lot of gore or something in it, you know, like some sort of bloodshed. A lot of times they curse. This is not one of those films where it's like PG Kung Fu Hustle, or not Kung Fu Hustle. It's like PG...
Kung Fu Panda?
I guess, yeah, Kung Fu Panda is one of them. I don't know, it's just something about this. Like, it just doesn't work for puppets.
Yeah, this felt very ambitious in how they use the puppets, because recently we watched the Dark Crystal Netflix show, and they used the puppets differently than they did here, in that, like, that show, they were very careful about how they, like, they didn't really show them, like, they didn't show their legs walking very often, but this one they showed it, like, constantly, and they were, and this was like more experimental with the camera angles and such. And I just don't know if they had the budget to really make it convincing. But for me, that the puppetry wasn't really like a factor in why I didn't like it. For one, the exposition was a lot. When they weren't fighting, they were just talking, explaining the plot. And there wasn't really much room for characters.
Like discovery of, or something.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, the action was frustrating because it was pretty much not a constant slow-mo. Like, they would do something, do slow-mo. And that was annoying. And I said, yeah, too self-serious. Took itself too seriously.
I think that's a pretty good point, because I don't think there was like one joke that was really made in that whole film. Yeah, it was a very serious film, but it's funny because it's like, it didn't feel serious, but there was not any comic relief.
It didn't feel serious?
It was like a wholesome kind of thing. Like, I don't know. It felt very wholesome, but not with, like, without comedy. It was like, it's like listening to lo-fi.
Lo-fi is good.
Yeah. It's very wholesome, makes you feel good, but that's about it. That's, yeah.
Right, like, it feels sincere. Like, it feels honest, and I respect that. And right. I will say, probably the last 5 minutes was my favorite, like, when they took off the mother's masks. That was pretty cool. When they played the happy music when they were on the beach, and Nani was walking her mom's sister around.
Yeah.
And there was like a dog or something. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I think my favorite part about this whole film, and I think it's because of the imagery that was involved, and that's one thing I really do appreciate about this film, is there was a lot of beautiful imagery, very good camera poses, like everything like was very well done as far as like the aesthetic, the appeal, gorgeous. But there was this one scene where Shojin and Nani were like thrown into the ocean, like deep into the sea, into the depths, and they come like they're like passed out, you know. Nani can probably see, but she can't talk. But Shojin is passed out and they're saved by this giant sea creature, and I was like, oh, I want more of him. Like, I wanted an entire story just around this like sea creature who's in the very depths of this ocean, just living there for ages. Love it. Love the lore.
Do you have anything else?
Let me see. Let me look at my notes. The one thing I was like, I don't think this was really geared towards kids. I'm really a little bit confused about who the audience was supposed to be for this. And I don't know if maybe you have an opinion or if you read anything about what the director pieced together for this, but it's a non-rated film. And there's no gore, there's no smoking, there's no sex, there's nothing that would be not fit for kids, other than the fact that it's a very complex story with a lot of like very detailed kind of sharp characters. I don't know if that makes sense, because like a lot of, you know, films that are geared towards children are like more rounded, they're cutesy, they're fun, but this one's very edgy. So I was a little bit confused about the audience, and it, you know, maybe the audience is for people like you and I, but then why wasn't it made a little bit more edgy? You know what I mean? It's like on the edge of edgy and being kind of basic.
Right. To your point about the, like, the shape of the characters.
Yes.
Because usually in kids' movies, they're, like, more rounded, more soft-looking, more approachable. But this one, they're, like, more, they're, like, sharper, scaly creatures, metal creatures and stuff. And I'm gonna talk about, like, the way the characters talk. Like, it's not, like, simplified for a kid, really. It's pretty it's not simplified for a kid. They just sort of talk in these isms, or whatever you said,
idioms. Yeah,
I knew that. I was just testing you. Which I think might appeal to adults, but at the same time it's not extremely violent. It's, you know, they don't swear or anything, like we said. So it's like, is it for kids, or is it not? I don't know.
And I think that may be why this movie hasn't caught on as well as maybe, like, as a creator, I would hope. Or like why there isn't like a huge cult following behind this film, because the audience is a very probably niche audience.
It seems like puppetry is like kind of niche, but I wonder if this movie, this film has like some pretty decently named actors working on it, and I wonder if they didn't like pay the money for those actors for that caliber, like could they have spent the money in other places, like maybe a writer or like set design and like different puppeteers. I don't know.
I mean, that's a good point. Like, they had really good names in it. Like, Whoopi Goldberg, George Takei, Nathan Fillion, and, like, a bunch of others. I was like, wow, this is, like, a really, really good cast of people that, like, would be really hard to have. Like, really hard to get on your set to do stuff. I feel like this was a really good film, but I don't know if a lot of regular people would enjoy this.
Right. It's first of all, the look of it is pretty niche. Like, it seems that most people like a cleaner art style when it comes to their art and stuff like that. And this sort of has like a rough look to it. And puppetry is kind of niche. It's not humorous, and usually, you know, people can get drawn in by that. It kind of has some things working against it.
Right. But as far as like the director and the producer, like, you know, he's kind of like playing a lot of hats here. Hale, like you said, like he, you know, lots of respect to him. Like, I'm sure whatever film he goes on to work on next can bring all of the information that he learned from this film onto the next thing, because he probably put all of his eggs in a basket for this one.
Is that all?
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. Thank you for listening to our episode on Yamasang March of the Hollows. Please come back next time as we discuss Phantom Boy.
All right. Thank you for listening to Saga Podcast, where we talk about animation and things. This is your favorite co-host, Sarah, and I would like to remind you, head off, that we do have a Twitter, a Facebook, an Instagram, a website, and soon to be a Patreon. So if you could reach out to us, leave us a comment, anything that you like, appreciate all of it. Otherwise, have a wonderful next time.
Bye. See you next time. I hope you liked it. Come again.